I know that selling can feel daunting, probably because we're surrounded by so many examples of pushy sales tactics, so we kind of feel like maybe that's the way to sell. And for those who don't like being pushy, this style feels uncomfortable, so we simply don't do it. And as a result, we basically don't sell. Well, I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to be your style, and if you work with me or have worked with me, you'll know that I only teach relationship-based sales and strategies that are permission-based. A quick example is, let's say you want to send someone more information about something you offer or get them on a discovery call. I advise people to do exactly what I do. Just ask the person you're speaking to if they'd like that. But aside from looking at sales strategies to get new clients through the door, there are also quick things you can do with the opportunities that are right in front of you. If you have started your business, regardless of where you are in your journey, you can actually implement the tips that I share in this episode straight away. So let's get started with small but impactful things you can do to make more sales. Welcome to the Upgrade Your Education Business podcast. I'm your host, Samantha, and I'm so pleased you're here. As an education business owner myself and a former teacher, I understand the nuances that only apply to us. So in this podcast, I share fluff-free, tailored and actionable ideas that you can mould to suit your needs. If you'd like to take this conversation further, please do reach out. I would love to meet you. And finally, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review. That way, you'll be helping me help more people. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy. Now, as I mentioned at the start of this episode, I'm not here to show you pushy sales strategies. In fact, you may have even heard me say this, but I take the word convince out of my definition of sales, and that really helps in reframing your style of selling. Instead of trying to persuade someone to have a different opinion, you're just helping them to make the right decision for them. So if you feel comfortable with that approach, just bear it in mind with the four strategies I'm about to share, so that however you implement them, you do it in a way that you feel really good about. My first strategy is to pay attention to the opportunities that already exist in your world. We deep dived into this in the Tutors Mastermind this month, so if you're a masterminder, just head over to the strategic growth section of the training space and you'll find the replay there. So one of the things to consider is your existing clients. And if you don't have any clients, don't worry, I'll share something for that very shortly. So one of the things I do is to really get to know my clients beyond their standard pain points. And I think of how I can improve their experience and deepen our trust. For example, I have a tutee who's dyslexic and she really struggles with her memory. In fact, I have two students who really struggle with memory. They're now in year 11, but when they were in year 9, I suggested that they start having an extra lesson each week so that I could dedicate one of them to those specific needs. Now, at this stage, if I hadn't built a strong relationship with them and their parents, they probably wouldn't have gone with the extra lesson, or at least they would have really had to think about it because it did come with a significantly increased cost. But they actually just didn't hesitate to say yes because they trusted that I was looking out for their children. And I'd say it's also the reason why a few of my one-to-one tutees also join my group classes when I've advised them to, and they've done that for actually 4 years and counting. So think about how you can deepen your relationship with your clients. As tutors, we actually do this really easily, especially if we teach one-to-one or very small groups, because, you know, we then have more flexibility with the kind of conversations we have. But we also want to do this with parents. And if you aren't a tutor, think about how you can have things in place to just keep getting to know your clients. For instance, many people I work with, regardless of if they're in the Tutor's Mastermind or if they work with me for one-to-one sessions, well, most of them have discovery calls. So that's my first touch point of getting to know them. But many people also join the Mastermind without meeting me first. So I have things like weekly emails and a Facebook group for full members in place. And through that, we can keep in touch and have conversations. And really getting to know your clients helps you come up with sellable ideas, because instead of creating something based on assumptions, you're actually creating it based on facts, based on things you know your clients need and want. I'll tell you a quick story about how this actually created a make or break situation with the Tutor's Mastermind. My initial idea wasn't what the Mastermind is now. My first idea was to create a video library that would update once or twice a month. I was basing it on the Netflix model. Now, at the time, I was having loads of discovery calls and one-to-one mentoring sessions with educators. So before I created anything, I just floated the idea with them. And all of them loved the idea of having this video library, but they also wanted something live from me. And so the Mastermind in its current state was born. It also meant that I already had the buy-in from a lot of my clients before I had kind of created or launched the Mastermind. So I was actually able to launch with paying clients, and they also helped me fine-tune it and shape it. It's actually an ongoing process. Recently, one of the members said how cool it would be to be able to go out into breakout rooms during our 90-minute sessions. I used to do this actually, but it kind of died down, so I revived it and everyone's loving it. We've also just added accountability groups so that members can support one another, again initiated by one of the masterminders. So you can launch new things and improve client experiences by just listening and responding. And remember, if you're a tutor, you have two target audiences. You've got your students and you've got your parents. You probably provide things for students, but how about your parents? Could there be opportunities to support them too? That's another easy way to grow your business. Now, I said I'd quickly talk about how you can implement this strategy if you don't have any clients yet. Well, the key is to take the strategy, not the actions I've talked about. As a reminder, this strategy is to look at the opportunities right in front of you. So although I talked about existing clients, you could focus on people who are simply in your world, like communities you're a part of, former colleagues who could recommend you, current colleagues you could network with and get to know. You could look at other means of generating leads and sales, like contacting local children activity providers and creating partnerships and collaborations. There are loads of ideas here, so as a reminder, if you are a masterminder, then head over to April's training in the Strategic Business Growth section of the Tutor's Mastermind for a really organized way of mapping out these ideas. And if you're not in the Mastermind, you're just a couple of clicks away. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to tutorsmastermind.com, tutorsmastermind.com. Now, linked to this strategy of forming relationships with clients and really listening to what they have to say, another I want to share with you is the importance of being open to honest feedback. In the Mastermind, I used to run two live sessions a month. They'd be on different topics. Now, no one said anything about them, but I noticed that overwhelm kept coming up in a lot of conversations. So I thought, how can I help? When I reflected, I thought that maybe the frequency of my live training was actually contributing to that overwhelm, especially because we covered a different topic each time. So instead of guessing, I asked my members. I asked them for honest feedback, and I also proposed a solution, if that were the case, of reducing it to one session a month. They all loved the idea, and they admitted that they were finding how I was running the Mastermind overwhelming. One of them actually suggested, why don't we focus on one topic a month? I thought that was a great idea, so we brought that change in as well. So it can feel scary asking for honest feedback, but it really is so, so powerful. As it has proved to me, it can actually make or break a business idea. In fact, a client of mine came really close to actually closing her business. She had set up a business supporting stressed teachers through courses, and no one was buying. When we took the time to really get to know her audience, we could see that, look, an overworked teacher was not going to make time for a course. So by considering changing what she offers or changing who she offers it to has made all the difference. And let's not forget that a big part of sales that we often forget is retention. It's not just about getting new people through the door. It's also about keeping your existing clients for longer. And this exercise of keeping in touch with them and asking for their input goes a really long way with that, because people feel seen and heard and therefore valued. Now, my third sales boost is to think about ways in which you might be leaving money on the table, namely to have something to nurture people who just need a little bit more time to think about whether or not they're ready to invest in what you offer. And the difficult aspect of this is that some people might be thinking about working with you, but they haven't actually interacted with you yet, so it's not like you can send them specific information. So this is where marketing and having a range of options can work really well. That doesn't mean that marketing needs to take over your life and that you need to be everywhere, but you could strategically choose a small range of content marketing ideas just to help people get to know you, what you offer, and for them to figure out whether it's right for them. Remember that with my definition of sales, we're not trying to convince someone, we're not trying to persuade them to have a different opinion, we're just trying to help them make the right decision for them. So essentially, it's great when you can create a world that people want to enter, a world that they want to stay in, and a world they want to engage in. And for that, we do need some variety. I know this works because I have had quite a few instances where it has taken someone a while to decide whether or not to work with me. For example, most people I meet in discovery calls say they have been listening to my podcast for a good while. I've had tutees join my classes a year after initially contacting me. Although I don't use my group so much now, in those situations, when they were unsure, I would point them to some freebies in my Facebook group that would help them decide whether or not I was the right tutor for them. I recently had a discovery call with a client who wanted one-to-one mentoring with me, but they had never invested in business support, so she was nervous. So she headed over to my free Facebook group, Upgrade Your Education Business, and she watched some of the free training videos in the guide section. And shortly after, actually, to be precise, it was within 24 hours of our discovery call, she contacted me and said, "I'm ready, I want to invest." I know both of those examples use Facebook groups, but I've used email marketing for this too. For example, I've directed people to things like lead magnets if they address a specific problem that my potential client has shared with me. So for people who you haven't interacted with yet, the thing to remember is that if they're connected with you in a few different places, you have an opportunity to nurture them and to get them really excited about what you offer. So let's say you're a tutor, you could have something like a Facebook page, you could use the technique of breadcrumbing to direct people to it, and you could have email marketing working for you in the background. Two platforms, that's it. But it's enough to create that world for people to enter and stay in. For Upgrade Your Education Business, I'm in a lot more places because it makes sense. I have a podcast, I'm on LinkedIn, I use Instagram. These are probably my main platforms. I also have a Facebook group, but I kind of use it for a slightly different purpose. And the thing that guides me are the people in my world. People contact me on LinkedIn and Instagram, so that steers my decision to stay active there. As I mentioned earlier, most people who work with me have been listening to my podcast, so I also publish weekly here. Very few people come directly through my Facebook group, but it does help people decide if they're unsure, so I've set it up with that in mind. So the point here is to create a variety of ways people can consume your messaging and to keep your content varied. That doesn't mean you can't repurpose, but give people an incentive to stay connected with you by varying the way you package your content on the different platforms. And remember, while social media is great for visibility and building relationships, it isn't the only method. You can explore what works for you and for your audience. My fourth tip is to be really, really clear on your selling style. I'll tell you why this is such a crucial part of selling. Selling is essentially an exchange of energy. Imagine if I spoke about the tutor's mastermind with little enthusiasm, or if I wasn't clear on exactly what you need to know to decide if it's right for you. You'd bounce off that energy and you'd probably disregard it. So when you become clear on your selling style, you'll deliver it like a pro because it's natural for you. You feel good and you're intentional about what you do or don't say. I'll give you an example of how this works in real life for me. I am very clear, as I mentioned earlier, that I am not here to convince people. I don't have sales calls. Although the term discovery call is very generic and commonly used, I actually put some thought into it because I use them for us to discover more about one another, not to sell. But I do still sell. I have to, otherwise I wouldn't have a business. And I do it through content mostly. So instead of having a lengthy and sales-focused meeting with someone, I use my content to gatekeep who contacts me. If, say, you listen to this podcast regularly, you'll have a pretty good idea whether we'd be compatible or not. And I also use my content to communicate what you need to know to decide if what I offer is right for you. And here is how that expectation and my sales style affects discovery calls with people who actually aren't aligned with me. I remember having a call with someone a while back, and a few seconds in, she said, "So, sell yourself to me then." It was an immediate red flag. If she wasn't already clear that I'm someone she wanted to work with, then I was not about to convince her, and I told her that. If I had tried to sell myself, honestly, I'd be awful at it, because it doesn't lean into my style of selling. Another discovery call that I didn't follow up with was when someone asked me, "So, how do I even know if investing in your one-to-ones will give me any results?" I actually replied with, "Well, how do parents know whether you as a tutor would be any good for their child?" Their question made it really clear that they hadn't done any due diligence before our call. In fact, when I asked them whether they'd taken a look around my website, if they had an idea of which service they quite liked, they said no. They had just scanned through some testimonials and booked a call from a post they saw from me on Instagram. So again, this doesn't lean into my style of selling. To mitigate the fact that this person hadn't even looked into who I am and what I offer, I would have had to fill the call with talking about myself and really selling myself. But remember, for me, it isn't a sales call, it's a discovery call. And that means the person I'm speaking to talks more than I do, because I want to get to know them. It's the only way I can truly help them make the right decision for them over selling myself by trying to push what I offer. Honestly, I like selling. I don't find it uncomfortable. And if you follow these tips, you'll start enjoying it too. Because I'm so comfortable with my style of selling, I don't hesitate to tell people how much I charge. I don't hesitate to be really transparent about it. I'm totally confident in how good what I offer is for the right person. And I'm confident that what I charge is more than worth the investment. That confidence will really filter through everything that you do if you clarify exactly what your style is. So there you have four small actions that can have a big impact on sales. They are: number one, to look at opportunities that are right in front of you. Number two, to welcome honest feedback. Don't be afraid of it. Number three, to create a world that people want to be in and stay in. And number four, to be really clear on your selling style so that you have a really confident mindset. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode and you've walked away with a few tips that you want to action. Thank you as always for giving me your time, and you'll hear from me on Wednesday. Would you like to take this discussion further? Perhaps you have some questions or you'd like more ideas on tailoring your business. If so, book a free discovery call through the link in the show notes.